grab your popcorn and snacks, find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin.
Well, hot dog, it got it all the way through. Ha, that's impressive. Evening, everybody. Welcome to California Haunts Radio. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team, based out of Sacramento, California. We are 45 strong in Pinellas State, which means if you think you have a paranormal need, we can get to you. It may take us a while, but we can get to you. But just know that you can find us all over the internet, almost every social media outlet. We're there. Ah, it's a great day. You know, that intro hasn't been working like that, so suddenly it decided to get all the way through. So I'm really excited that it did that, okay? And like I said, we've still got some training wheels over here at Restream, but I'm getting used to it more and more. If anybody is interested, we are going to be doing some stuff on some real fun stuff coming up here for the holiday. I'll be doing that on TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook, actually. And that's where we're broadcasting today is mainly Facebook and YouTube. But we're going to be building a gingerbread house, which you guys can help with, give suggestions. Going to be building a Oreo cookie train, which is going to be really cool. Really cool to try. And a few other holiday things. And so I'm really excited to do that with you guys. Anyway, let me get this adjusted one more time. There we go. As long as it doesn't fall on me. There we go. Anyway, my guest tonight. Oh, see? It snapped off one time and broke. Okay. Anyway, my guest tonight. I got to get a new boom. My guest tonight, Zason Z. Seldesky. I think I said his last name right. He has a very interesting story to tell. And you know, there's a lot of news out there now, especially with Congress, you know, talking about UAPs and things like that. Zason has a very unique story to tell. And I want to let him tell it, but he had an encounter while he was hiking, and that encounter led to multiple visitations with aliens, and I think you're going to find his story very interesting. So I'm real excited to have him on, so let me get him in right now, okay? All right, here we go. Hey, Zason, how's it going?
Great.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Welcome back. Tell everybody about you.
Just a man, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but always just a man. I've been to school, got several degrees, military contractor, bounty hunter, done just about everything I can think of. One day I sat down to try to write down all the jobs that I've had, and I guess gave up.
So how does your story start? For the people that haven't heard your story before, tell us how all this started.
Yeah, I teach soldiers to become warriors. It's for large contracting companies, and we do it down in the Glades, and we're like 100 miles from anything. And every once in a while, when we're done or there's a slack time, I take a walk, and it's usually at night and stuff, and I go out in the swamps. The other guys don't seem to care for that, but to me, it's something really unique, and it's beautiful, and there's all these different smells and everything. Anyways, it's really something different, and so I was going for this walk like normal, and I was on one of the game trails, and I come along to this, there's a blonde lady in this blue like jumpsuit, and she's tangled up in one of the mangrove trees. And for people who don't know the mangrove trees, it's like their roots are growing out of the ground. So, it's kind of difficult to work your way through those things because it's all surrounded by what we call the suck, right? It's you step in it, you go up to your knee, you know, that sort of thing. And so anyways, I saw that and I'm starting to wonder, was I smelling something out there or did I eat something? Because this just didn't fit anything, right? And so anyways, she was absolutely beautiful. And so she saw me and she looked a little startled and stuff. And I stood there and just didn't walk any further. And I kind of looked at her and I could tell, you know, she was tangled up. And so I approached it as I would an animal, right? Getting all hung up in something. And I just took my time, got a little closer. And when I got close enough where I could see her, her eyes were very large. And, you know, that didn't fit either. And so, you know, I'm just letting this go through my head and out the other end. And so I could just, you know, be there and be present. And so I stopped and I pulled out a cigar. And so while I'm standing, you know, in proximity, probably 20 feet from her. And so to let her get comfortable. And then I, you know, moved in a little bit closer and took my time. And then I saw, who, you know, that she was all tangled up. And I kind of used, you know, hand language to say that I wanted to help her. And so she seemed to agree. And so I pulled out my knife, which made her jump a little bit more. And so, you know, I kind of show her with, you know, the sharp side and stuff like that. I didn't know what she knew or anything. And then I just slowly approached and set it on one of the part of the tree and so that she could look at it. So she picked it up and examined it and everything and then set it back down and then looked at me as though it was approval. So I went in there and I freed her. And, you know, long story short, you know, I got her out of that and back up on the grain trail. And then as she started to walk, I could tell she wasn't walking right. And so it looked like she had injured her leg or something. So, yeah, I motioned to her again that I could pick her up and take her where she wanted to go. Because she, you know, she was like 5'6", 5'7", something like that. She's short and didn't look like, you know, all wet. She would be 100 pounds. So, anyways, she agreed and allowed me to grab her. And when I grabbed her, it was, the material was so different. I never felt anything quite like it, you know. And so when I went to lift her, I almost threw her over my head. She must have weighed like 25 pounds. Later, I found out they can adjust their weight, you know, at times. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's a whole nother story. But anyway, so I carried her and she kept like leading me the way, pointing the way. And we got to this big mound that didn't have any vegetation on it. And at the time, I didn't understand what those mounds were or anything. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so she, you know, motioned for me to set her down. And then when I did, I kind of backed up a little bit. And then, you know, she's like shooing me away. And so as I start to walk, I turn and look back and I see it was almost like the sky was opening up. There was like this blue light that came down and she had her hands together like in prayer sort of thing, or like you would see a monk or something. And boom, she was gone. The hole closed and I didn't see anything else. So I thought to myself, well, that was interesting. And whether it was real or not, I didn't know. You know, I just couldn't tell because it was just everything did not fit. And so it was probably, a week, 2-3 weeks later, I'm walking out and doing a hike again. And I told myself, no, I'm not going to walk back that direction. And then I ended up doing it anyway. I was just curious if there was any cat tracks or anything on the mound. And so as I got back there, you know, I'm looking around and stuff. And then suddenly I see this blue light come down over me. And it was like, I thought to myself right away, okay, I'm being abducted or something here. Right. And, but I thought to myself, you know, what the heck? Because I mean, if they eat me and do all that stuff or something, then I got a great story to tell when I get to heaven. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't seem to fear things. I just kind of accept the because of, you know, my life and stuff, I just sort of accept whatever is, right?
Right.
And so anyways, I get on board and I see there's like six of them, 3 men and 3 women. And I'm looking at them one by one and it looked like none of them really wanted me there. And I'm getting this, you know, a little bit negative feeling. And then I get down to the end where Sam Jess is, or the one I picked up, and she's just smiling and waving at me. So I figured, okay, I'll see where this goes. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning.
When you talk about them, who are they exactly? Do you know?
They're the Plagiarans. If, you know, a lot of people always ask me directions and stuff. Where is this or where is that out in space? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you think about it, it's like being in the middle of the ocean and somebody asking you directions, right?
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
You know, but if we go to the Pleiades and then about another 80 light years, which is really short distance, past that is where their home planet is.
Okay. What do they look like exactly? Because I know, and I know you saw, you saw what you thought was a woman. How different do they actually look when they're aboard ship?
Well, they appear just like us. I mean, for the most part, the ears are slightly different. Not that it would be that noticeable, but their eyes are a lot larger, and that most of them are very tall. I would say like 6'5" or something like on average. But Sam Jess was really short, I didn't put it all together at the time, but so most of them are very large, but they're all like very perfect, their bodies and stuff, the way they look. You know, I found out later that their bodies are also very similar to ours, almost identical, except for they excrete some of their waste through their skin, but I've never been able to feel it or smell it or anything like that. I know their intestine is a lot shorter. But other than that, you know, and they didn't know English at all because they weren't a contact crew. I found out later they were just a lab ship, and it was an accident that Sam Jess got stuck out there because she's kind of like a wild child, and she's allowed to get away with a lot of things. And so anyways, that's how that all came to be. But as far as looks and everything, I've brought them here, and the only thing that I have to be concerned with is their eyes. So they've actually created like some like gargoyle type sunglasses and stuff like that, you know, kind of fashionable looking thing. And it reduces the size of their eyes, but they look with if somebody's to look at them. So, but that's really about it. And what's really interesting to me is it took me quite a while. I've just finished my 10th book and in the process of publishing it in less than 3 years. So there's so much information. And that was kind of funny how that came to be too, is like my friends wouldn't stop asking me the same questions over and over. So I said, I'll just write a book. And so I wrote a book, threw it on Amazon and told them about it. And so that they had better questions to ask me. Next thing I knew, it just took off. I guess people were craving what I talk about in the books.
Well, it is, you know, it is interesting because people want to know about this stuff. I mean, it's huge right now. It's exploding all over the media, even Congress, right? So, I mean, there is a huge interest. Now, this wasn't the first visit you had with them, was it?
Oh, no. It's a regular basis now. I call my family.
Mm-hmm. When you say regular basis, what do you mean? Clarify.
Well, it's just kind of like you have a neighbor, right? And, you know, you go over and the visit, you know, I have a good time with them and stuff like that. So, you know, they're close to you. And, you know, ever since then, you know, I'll go up for 3 or 4 days sometimes, and or else I'll be up there for a day or even 3 hours and come back, because it's so easy to go to and from the ship. I walk in my hallway and it's like I take one step, in where I know I'm at, and the next step is on the ship. Which is also interesting too. You're like scanned. The gravity is a lot less than here, not a lot less, but enough where I notice the difference, which is really good for me because I got a bad back and everything. And the air is cleaner. You know, they take all the bugs off your body, basically. You know, we have thousands of bugs that live on our body, and basically they take them off, but it's a good thing too. So they replace those, not with, you know, bugs, but something, an alternative to that, that's safer for us.
So what do you do when you're aboard the ship?
All kinds of stuff. There's one, I named these two of the guys, Hans and Franz, because they reminded me of that old Saturday Night Live show. They're very, you know, muscular and stuff, and one's tall and one's not as tall. And the one named Hans, he's more of a scientist, and so I really get along with him really well, but he shows me things. He's kind of like me. He just likes to have fun a lot. And so he shows me different things. You know, he helped me learn how to fly like one of the pods and another spaceship that they have. And, you know, he helped me explain to me how they move and how they travel, which is interesting to me. It doesn't have to, you know, they do the low fly arounds, right? When they don't want to actually directly go to the point, like he said, I asked him one time, well, why don't you just go right to the planet? And he says, that wouldn't be any fun, you know, sort of thing. you know, other of them will, you know, take the direct route. But it's interesting, like if they want to travel through space, what they do is they can tell, like they'll find the point in space that they want to go. You know, it could be 500 light years away, if it, or sometimes a little more than that at per what I call jump, right? I homerize a lot of the things so that I can understand it. But like they can map every frequency that's there and every frequency that could change by the time they go from where they are to that place. And then they just become that frequency. And if you're looking out the window at the time, it's basically like, you know, somebody opening a window and shutting a window, right? Or vice versa. Okay. I mean, it's, you don't notice, you don't feel it or anything. You just become that part of space.
So it's almost instantaneous then to travel from one place to another?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
And it's all based on frequency.
So that's how they, you know, get around. Interesting.
Yeah. But, you know, now that there's some kind of coil system. I don't know how that works or anything, but like say they are near a planet and they want to go down and they'll take one of the shuttles down. Now that's using that form of energy. I don't know how that is, but I don't hear anything and I don't see anything come out, you know, the backs of them or anything like that.
Have they showed you other stuff as well?
All kinds of things. And they explain a lot of stuff too to me, you know, to help me understand. Just like, you know, Hans is usually on top of it. He's the one, the other one, Franz, I talk to a lot, because they show me things in ways that I can understand, kind of like energy, how they collect energy, which is, you know, those tubes that you used to use in the bank, you know, that would suck your money over into the bank.
Right.
Yeah, it was kind of like something like that. And what he did was he threw it outside of the ship, and which is kind of a cool thing too, because you can walk to a certain point and you're still within, that you can breathe, don't need a suit or nothing like that. But he throws it out and he just leaves it out there for a little bit. And what it does is it collects light. And then when, you know, it was like 20 minutes and he brings it in, and then we go into his place where he works and stuff, and he puts it on sets it like near a table on top of this contraption. And what it is vacuum. It vacuums it and compresses it. So it ends up looking about the size of like those batteries you stick onto a drill, you know, the battery operator, about that size. And what he explained to me is that light is what the energy is, and the vacuum is what creates the power. And you could take one of those and put it on a big warehouse like a Walmart or something like that, and it would power it for like 9 years, and it would cover the air conditioner and everything. It can't be interrupted by lightning or anything like that. And like he told me to pull out my phone, so I pull out my phone, I notice it's charging. If you're in proximity of this thing, it'll charge a device. So I thought that's pretty cool. And he was always really confused, why do people use solar, because it's so dirty. And, you know, I asked him to explain that to me. He says both batteries and all this stuff and what they use to build it, where this is absolutely free and we could be doing this. And he said also there's actually a patent that somebody had invented this at around the same time as solar. But we chose solar. And so I explained to him, well, solar we make money with, you know, collecting light and compressing it. Well, there's no money in it. So that's probably why we took that direction.
So that's what you hear about, you know, floating around the internet about free energy then. That's what that must be.
I don't know. I've heard several like theories and stuff, and I even had documents of a person who created like an energy device, but it always takes some sort of, you know, something to use, where this is just collects light, compress it in the vacuum, and you got it. It's just ready to go.
That's absolutely fascinating. Do they want to share their technology with us, or are we not ready for it? Or
no, we're, you know, the longer I'm with them, the more I know that we're not even close to being ready. It's a consciousness thing. And as far as contact goes, until recently, there was like the way they showed me that we're of interest, our planet, but not much of an interest. And the Plagiarians really never had anything to do with it. And they told me about, like, there's videos you can see on YouTube where these little kids, like, there's a Chinese one. I think it's been taken down since then, but like she walks into this room where these flowers are almost dead. And as she walks past them, they open up. And so like she explained to me, the idea is like, you know, the 100th monkey sort of thing is you teach the young, the ones that have not been programmed, which is a whole nother story, but in a way that they can understand, right? And and they're not allowed to be teachers or anything like that. They just have to be an example and just to live the certain way. And so they're able to do a lot of things, you know. And one of the most important things that they've told me is that we can do so many things, and showed me how that's done. And you know, like they like the phrase I use, because like I say, I like to Homerize things. You know, when Jesus was healing all those people, the Bible story, and when he finished, he said, "You, the people of this earth, can do all that I can do and more." Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely right. The things that we see as magic aren't really magic, you know, like levitation or walking through walls and stuff. Those are things that we can do. But the problem is like how we've divided our hemispheres, where, you know, women usually think with emotion and men usually logic, which both of them are equally as good. But if they were together, they're even more. And that's what's called like a blended mind. And they put me through a long process to help with me with that. So the thing is we got all this empty space in our brain. I mean, we use our whole brain, but there's a lot of space that we can put. I use it like files, right? We have to have these memories and these memories of love. Love is the key to all of this. And it sounds funny and everything, but if you read my books, you'll see the evidence of that. So you're going to need to fill your mind with memories of love. And that's the key to unlocking what we call magic. And that's our evolution. So,
but it makes sense because when you know, once we're born, our parents train us a certain way. Our minds start to work a certain way. And once it's filled with that certain way, it's kind of hard to be open to new ideas like this, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I can see what you're talking about, because essentially it's like you have to have an open mind for this stuff to be able to do it. Otherwise, you know, like the current scientific thinking isn't going to allow this, you know, they're not, no matter what you do to show them, they're not going to believe any of it.
No. And that's where what natural law comes into play. What I've named it natural law, because it's like the path of least resistance. Like they don't have schools or anything because they're not necessary, but they do have like they put the baby in, you know, it's like a test tube. It's not really a test tube, but it's water, right? And they're in there and they feed them with light and the music tones, right? That sort of thing is kind of what they go through until they're old enough to come out, which, you know, it's really hard to guesstimate how old they are, because like they live to be, you know, 600 to 800 years old. Mm-hmm. And so when they're born, to me, what I see is like when I see Sam Jess, you know, she's 260 some years old, and I see a 24-year-old. And these what I would call babies, they're I would say 2 to 3. That's what they kind of appear to me as, but I'm sure it's different than that. But anyway, when they are released from this, they have several parents that are already prearranged. Of course, the biological, which is another story, because they don't really have sex, except for like in certain reasons, certain causes or some tribal sort of thing. Anyway, once they're released from that, these mothers and fathers, they'll give them the things that they're attracted to. And this is natural law. They'll like, if they like a game, right? Well, they'll give them that game. And then when they find the things that they like the most, they start giving them more advanced stuff as they grow. Mm-hmm. And until they master whatever it is that they're looking for. And so the way natural law works and the way they use it is that by doing it this way, you know, like how we have like technology and it changes and suddenly you don't need this technology anymore. So all these people are out of work and they got to get retrained and stuff. Well, it's not necessary with them because they're already following what's coming next. And so there's never a shortage of what they may need. You know, they don't have a monetary system or anything, but the people are just totally addicted to learning. And when people ask me, oh, what's Hans do or what's Laura do? You know, what's their thing? And they'll have a specialty, the thing that they began with, you know. But what happens is it continually evolves, because as they look at that and they're learning that, they look at other things to that is of interest that are similar and parallel to it. So by the time, you know, they get done, you can't really describe what their job is. It's everything, you know. So, and they want to do this. They want to contribute, you know, to like the community or whatever it may be. And there's many races that are connected to this. Now, you know, mostly I hang out with like the humanoids. I've met several different races and they're all like us, similar, but I mean, they're very different, a lot of them, but most of them are. But they're still, you know, two arms, two legs, a head, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's brilliant. But there's also what they call the bug people, or I call the bug people. They're the ones that look, you know, manis or whatever, and what people talk about. They're and it's funny, they follow natural law too, but from what I've learned is that they're a lot like a hive mind or insects, the way they work together. And to communicate with them is extremely difficult. That's why they kind of stay separate. It's not because of anything else, but now like they'll go to harvest a planet for materials that they need, right? Well, natural law demands that they do not affect the planet in any way, other than, you know, something that will regrow or whatever. It doesn't alter their orbit or anything else like that. So they stay with that within those guidelines, but they harvest everything that they want, everything except that will not affect the planet. And then they have more than what they need. And so what they do is they'll share with the more humanoid type beings. And then another funny thing is they're scary looking, right? And, you know, if you ever looked at like a spider in a microscope, you look at their face and how scary it is. And they've totally assured me, right, of, you know, I'll be fine. You know, if you want to meet one, we can arrange that. So it's like, yeah, sure. And then as the time came closer, I was like, I don't know about this. And so I got to meet one of them, and it was exactly like I said. It's like looking at a bug through a microscope. I mean, it was like 3 feet from me, and I was petrified. And I knew it was not going to harm me. It had no evil intent, none of that. Yet, because of its appearance, you know, I was still frightened from its being in its presence. But anyway.
Well, I mean, what were they like? Were they nice enough, or were they standoffish, or what?
No, they just they understood, because they made the communication to them that if they would, you know, that who I was, and that you know, I would be interested in meeting one of them, and they totally were happy with that. And so I went there, and you know, I was as polite as I could be, but inside I was just like petrified. Just its appearance was just so horrific, you know, and all kinds of thoughts came into my head, you know, like, yeah, whatever you want to think of. And I can imagine, so if a person would meet them, that they would have that impression, but it, none of it's true.
So what about the medical tests we hear about?
About what?
About those medical tests. You know, the people that are contactees will come back and say that there were medical tests done on them and stuff?
Well, see, this is my experience, and I know that if I would go into depth of what I feel about it, then I'm going to get a lot of haters. But here's one thing you can, you know, here's one thing. They don't have that intent, because they would not exist. Yeah, once they become interstellar, you know, that goes out the window, because it would be, you know, hurting them in their race. But, you know, like, where was I going with that? Shoot. I forgot. It totally left me.
I mean, have they done any? Okay, go ahead.
One thing that a lot of people don't understand, like when they talk about hybrids and stuff like that, it's not necessary, because they can go to any hiking trail and put in a 12-inch rod down there and collect a soil sample, and they can collect 40 years worth of DNA. They can take that DNA and recreate that being. So I don't quite understand the hybrid sort of thing.
Okay. I just wondered. Mm-hmm. When they're talking with you, Yeah, because obviously they wanted you to come back and talk to them, so you must have made an impression on them, obviously. And so, did it shock you the second time you came in contact with them?
Yeah, and what I found out later was that, you know, they had told their commander, you know, their hierarchy, what happened. And then Sam Jess, you know, I didn't know at the time, but she's like royalty and kind of like a wild child. And so nobody in there really liked her very much because they didn't really work with her and she didn't have a job, you know, in a sense. And so she was kind of like running the show when she wanted to. And so anyways, they encouraged them to try to communicate with me because they were not skilled at doing contact work. And the ones that were in contact kept running into difficulties with, you know, us because of the way we were. And so anyways, they just threw it out there that I'm not of any danger to them. And they have ways of being protected, right? So they wanted to communicate with me, try to get that. And funny thing was, is they didn't know English, but every language, as I've learned, has a certain rhythm to it and a meaning according to the vibration or the frequency of what we're saying. And so they're able to adapt very quickly. The first time I met Sam Jess, she didn't know anything as far as the language goes, but she was listening to me. And when I went the second time, she was able to speak to me in English, but just not very deeply. And the others also were able to speak some mild English. So we'd have, you know, communications where they would ask me questions and things. But it got to a point where it was really disturbing to me because it would, you know, I would say something like a man walking down the street without a shirt, right? And so for 16 hours, I got asked questions about that. And what I realized is that they were just, you know, they need to know everything. That's what they want to do. That's how they put it into their head so that if they would, like, meet somebody, not that that was their intent, but if they would meet somebody, they would actually know everything about what I was just talking about. And that came to a point where I was really enjoying these people, but I really didn't like what we were doing. And so, you know, I said, yeah, I think we need a break. And it was kind of funny because the captain there, he said, yes, so you think this is done? And I says, no, you give up too easy. I said, we're family, right? And I said, I just need a break from all this. And so I come back home, and then it was like 3 or 4 days later, Sam Jess actually came here to my apartment, just showed up, right? And I'm watching a TV show, like a sitcom, and she was interested. So she laid, I only have a bed, it's a studio apartment and stuff. So she laid next to me and we watched the show. And she had me explaining it a few times. So we watched the same thing about two more times. And then I kept playing it. And she goes, why do you keep playing the same show again and again and again? I said, because this is what it is like for me on your ship. And that opened up a big door where I could recommend like films or something that we do here so that they could ask me questions of that. And so that helped a lot in the beginning. But the important thing was, is that you cannot hide anything from them. You have to be absolutely open and pure. You know, like here on Earth, we have to have a different face for each person that we meet in order to communicate. And we can't go around, oh, love and light and all that sort of thing without being, you know, thought of as loony. And plus, it's not reciprocated in the same way, right? And so when I'm on the ship, I don't have that privilege. I have to be 100% open and, you know, complete, right, to them. And I call it being naked. And so we got to a point where when I went through and I was, you know, scanned like each time, they said they wanted to ask a question of me, and they ask about all the scars, the bullet holes and stuff like that on my body. And, you know, one time they had told me that they saw Earth people as like monsters, like wild animals and stuff. And that's why they were in fear to come here. And so it was like, oh, man, you know, because it was a struggle for me to first start to adapt to being 100% open in everything. I mean, it's, if you think about it, it's very difficult to go and just open yourself up to a complete stranger, right? And, but I don't, you know, it's when they ask, that's when it comes. And so I was really having a hard time with that, especially with the types of work that I did where it's all about secrets, right? And so anyway, they were putting me on the spot when they asked that, because I thought, okay, I tell them like this and they're going to know me as a monster, right? And just exactly what they thought, and they would have fear. And but I couldn't, also couldn't lie to them. I couldn't even kind of, you know, white lie it. I couldn't do any of that. And so what I figured was, since I had introduced like the television sort of thing, the shows and everything, I said, well, there's a movie that I could show you that's not me, not like me, but it represents, you know, who I am. It shows how people will put themselves in harm's way for one who can't. And so I showed them the movie Taken. And well, I didn't want to show them all. I only wanted to show Sam Jess because she was on my side, right? And so I was more comfortable with that. So she takes me into her room and she pulls out like this little bed, and there's this round like screen thing above, so we could lay there and look up and see the movie. And so I'm thinking as it's going on, you know, because if people don't know the movie, it's a girl that gets taken, and the father will go through anything to get to her and save her. And so right towards the end, well, during it, I kept hearing noises from the rest of in the rest of the ship. And I was like, oh my God, they're all watching this, you know? So my plan went bad. But when it got towards the end, you know, she put her face up there and was just like crying and seeing it. They do that a lot. They cry a lot, looking at, you know, the ending where he saves her. And so, you know, she after it's over and stuff, she goes out of the room and leaves me in there. And they got this really cool thing where I can get coffee out of the wall, right? And I love coffee. I'm totally addicted to coffee. And so I figured maybe I should just get this one because this is probably my last day on the ship. And I was really in fear that, you know, they wouldn't understand or they would assume, you know, something of me. So as I drank that, I got kind of slowed down. Finally, I'm just because come out, you know, I call it the living room. It's out in the front where the people gather and stuff. And so I go out there and they're all like sobbing and crying and they're coming towards me and they encircle me. And I've did a lot of talks at churches where other pastors from other churches would come to hear me talk about human trafficking, because, you know, that's my charity, is we save kids from human trafficking. And so, you know, they do the lay of hands on you in prayer, and it's always rather powerful to me. But this time it was the Bajarans, and they weren't praying for me. They just wanted to love on me. And so they touched my back, and I just fell to the floor. It was so powerful. And they just felt so sad that how we, what we have to, you know, they didn't understand what we go through on, on earth. And so that really changed a lot of things, but it was a struggle for quite a while to adapt to who they are.
Did they visit the earth in ancient times?
There's always been a monitoring of our planet plus several other planets, you know? So yeah. I would say that they did. But just like this lab ship, it came down for the purpose of studying like insects and migration, those sort of things is what I understood. And it just got caught up in it where Sam just went for a hike. And next thing you know, right. I'm there.
Well, you made me wonder about that when they, you know, when they, when you said that they thought of humans as monsters, because, maybe, you know, of creatures, because it made me think that maybe the Neanderthals and all that, you know, they were able to monitor that at some point, and then they all thought we were like that.
That's interesting too. They've taught me a lot about what life really is and how we began. And the best way to describe it is my homerization, because they get real scientific on me and they know when they're going too far, so I redefine it, right? And so if you would imagine it, the evolution isn't correct. If you look at a tree, right, with all the leaves on it, and one of those leaves fall down, that's a species. And it hits the ground and takes off running, and it either survives or doesn't. And we've had multiple, like there's an example of the winged beings, right, that we see with elongated heads and that sort of thing. Well, they were next to us as humans were evolving, you know, growing. And so most species die out, other ones thrive like ours did for a point. But you can also see examples of that in, I forget the name of it. It's near Lake Titicaca. I think it's in Bolivia, where they have like the Lego blocks that fit together so precisely. Well, and like they showed me, they said, it's just like the pyramids. These were poured, you know, they created these things. And then the magnet type effect that they have, they showed me where there's magnetite or whatever it was that they mined to bring down there to put into the mix. When you look at the pyramids, if you break it apart, you see what they call coin. It's those little like starfish, not starfish, but the circular type little shell. You'll see that ingrained within the blocks. And then you can also see the glass, which was the molds, that if you stick something in between the rocks, that's how they got them so perfectly. But anyways, that was interesting to me. And then they taught me who we are.
When you talk about who we are, can you share that?
Yeah. I use an extreme homerization here because it's what they told me was very difficult for me to understand. So I had to, it was like when I was in college, I put things together with a different type of representation so that it's easier to understand.
Sure.
So basically we never die, right? And we're conscious. And so if you can imagine a big puzzle board up in space, and each one of those is a fragment of the consciousness as a whole, because we're all connected, right? And then you know, there's this big dude that long, you know, gray hair, he's sitting on a big lazy boy, and in front of him is all these TV screens, you know, kind of like in the Matrix, right? And so what happens is that we project. We never leave consciousness. We're not really here. There is no time either. And like what we would call our past lives or future lives and present life, they're all going on at exactly the same moment. If you had blink your eye, that's more than enough time to fit all that we can remember in. And so what happens is essence of is placed on consciousness, a piece of consciousness, which is projected here. And those TVs that big dude consciousness is sitting on watching is like a TV series. So if you imagine past lives, each one of those TV sets has one of our lives on it that's being projected down there. And then when we, what we call pass away or die in the physical body down here, well, we're not here, right? It's projection, and that projection ends. And so how it's still alive is that it's placed in a file, right? That's why I use like a museum or whatever. And that file can be accessed by anybody at any time. And I think that relates a lot to like ghosts and communications with ghosts. When they're talking to a ghost in the past, they're not really in the past, they're present, but they talk about the past, right? And so that kind of, it made a lot of sense to me that we never die and they're always accessible to us. And we never come here, but when that, that projection ends, we choose another piece of consciousness, apply the essence, our essence, our soul, to that, and we're projected back down here again.
Do they have any opinions about a lot of the sightings that people have now, and a lot of the contactees that that are getting abducted by these other aliens? I mean, what, you know, why do they think these other aliens are doing this stuff?
Well, it depends, you know, that's a big question. But like they told me, an alien being here, they're only seen if they want to be seen, number one. They never hurt any of the aircraft that chase after them and shoot missiles at them. When they taught me, this will help explain a lot how they work. When I got the opportunity to fly in one of the pods, what you have in it is what I named PI. What happens is it's a living energy or like plasma that they've created. It's a living being that has certain things that it does, right? And basically when you see a picture of a UFO and you see like a little cloud around it, or, you know, a distortion around it, that's what the PI is. And it will not allow you to be harmed. And it'll keep it from, like, if somebody shot a missile at it, it would move out of its way, right, on its own without you having to worry about it. And it knows you, right, the person who's piloting it. And so, like, if I was to jump in into a space that wasn't safe, it would put me in a different place. And it's like instantaneous when that happens. And so, you know, all these sightings and stuff, I don't know what to believe of them for the most part. I do know that, like, we were in a ship that we went underwater, and I got to go into the depths out side of Hawaii, and we went down into a ravine very deep where we met other beings and stuff like that. But it was like my first introduction to it. And then we went right through a mountain. And what it does is it's all about that frequency again. It becomes that frequency at which it's going through. And then, and it's instant. As you move out of it, then it becomes another frequency back to its original state. And, you know, that's a very broad answer to the question.
Right.
But it kind of gives you the idea of how they work. And also, a lot of people, this is one thing that I get asked a lot, is about, you know, what race uses this sort of ship, and what race
right.
uses it? Well, they make the ships for themselves. And so it's endless, the shapes that you will see. And it can be multiple different races that uses different shapes. They design it for themselves and for the purposes that they need to use it. And they're not worried about aerodynamics or anything like that, because they don't have to worry. They don't have a propulsion system that works that way.
Okay, that's absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So, like you said earlier, they're here to observe us. Do they see any time in the future that they would actually be, you know, be contacting or populating here or doing stuff with us one-on-one?
Like I use this story, like I saw this old show one time, and it was to the point. If they gave us like something that would provide water for everybody around the world, it would never get there in our today's consciousness. You know, somebody would grab it and make, because they don't have a monetary system. We have a monetary system which divides all of us. You know, it would be so easy to move into that direction, but everybody would have to take care of each other and care about each other. So what they're doing with these children, they're helping create a consciousness that will, like, somebody sees it and then say emulate it, and another and another and another, until we reach that point where our consciousness is united throughout our entire planet. And then they could make, you know, connections. There is some contact that happens with certain governments, especially our government, different types of races and stuff, but it's not what people think. They actually live here with them. And like, if they give us technology, it's because it's safe. And like, they'll need a part or something to make something, and that they don't have it. And so what they'll do is they'll give it to the government, ask them to make it for us. And in return, basically they're getting the knowledge of how that part works.
Okay. Now, these people that you're in contact with are a very peaceful lot of people. But, I mean, you got the other ones running around like the reptilians, and then these other ones that seem to be more aggressive. How do they feel about them? You know?
I haven't experienced any of that, and I've met hundreds of races. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit. The only time that, like, the way they explained to me that something like a bad alien, right, would be possible is not to be interstellar. Mm-hmm. Somebody who is still trying to achieve things and doesn't understand natural law.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes sense. Now, we never talked about food. Do they eat?
Yeah. this has always been a fun subject. When I was first up there one time, I was hungry, of course. And, you know, I asked, you know, how do I eat and stuff? And they have these funny places on the wall where you can actually get it. And I have a hardest time trying to figure that out. But they're like little gray balls. And, you know, you can get them. And I didn't know at the beginning. It was very bland. But they're full of energy. And when you put them in your mouth, like, say you, like, I want, like, that. Yeah, I have a menu there that they adapted for me, so that I would have those flavors, right? And so, like, if I want a hamburger, I get this little gray ball and I put it in my mouth, and it's as though I got a hamburger in my mouth. But the difference is it's highly nutritious. And then one time I was at one of their colonies, and people like to do things. Like, there are people who enjoy farming. They don't have to farm. It's all automated. But some people really enjoy those things, and then they share what they grow, right, with their friends and relatives and neighbors, strangers, everybody. And sometimes they even put in like have stores in a, like I call it the mall, right? In a, you know, it reminds me of a strip mall. So anyways, I went into this one shop, they took me in there, and this guy there, he would actually produce food that looked like my food. And, you know, he said, what I like. And he was willing to show me how they do it and everything. And I said, you know, steak and lobster, you know, why not? Right. And so, and that's what it got. But, and I also saw the lady I was with, she had big leather boots, and I was curious. I go, so where does that come from? You know, I mean, are you like us? Right. And when I eat the steak, it's beautiful. And the lobster, it was the best lobster I ever had. And so he explained to me, they grow like the tail, a non-conscious being basically, or they grow the leather. They have the technology that does that. So they can recreate that. But they've also taken me to one of the colonies where they showed me how those fruits and stuff that they make the gray balls out of, how they grow them. And one of the fun parts was, is they, Hans was with me. He says, stick your finger in the soil. I said, okay. So I do that, and I pull it back out because it was moving. It was like the soil itself was alive, right? But I mean, there's so much that I can go into, but you know, those are brief. I can tell you about dark matter. I can tell you about how the solar system was, our solar system was created. All those, it's really easy. Let me do that before we run out of time. But
like, all right, go for it.
Like our solar system. Well, dark matter exists, right? Right. Or it doesn't exist. There is no such thing as dark matter. It's that we haven't defined it. And because in space, each place has a different type of, we call it mathematics. We haven't figured that out yet. And so it can be identifiable and it's layered. And so that's kind of what dark matter is. And we've complicated it because a lot of people get money to do studies. And when they can't figure it out, they just throw it into the box of dark matter. So they don't have to explain it and still get their money. As far as the solar system, what happens is there's a tear in the fabric of space. And what happens when they get a tear in there, it starts to heat up and it starts to foam. And in that foam, it'll collect things that are passing by over a period of time, right? And that's what we're planets and things like that are birthed. Also, like a lot of times, well, they want to produce a certain type that they can use for minerals and stuff like that. They're allowed to do that to the point where it doesn't interfere with what would be natural anyway. And so they can integrate, put ingredients in a way. So it gets to a certain point, and the way I explain it is when it reached that one maximum point, it has like a gas movement, right? It shoots it out and they spread out, and they're not always circular, but over a period of time, rotating and all that, and the friction, they become circular, which is what most of space is. But anyways, that's the quick version.
Absolutely fascinating. Now, here's another question I was curious about, and this may seem silly to you, but you're up there. You have to use a restroom because you were talking earlier about how they secrete their waste. And so what happens when you're up there and you have to secrete your waste?
They don't have that. Not all of it comes out through their skin, right?
Right.
So they do have the functions that we do because their bodies are very similar to ours. And but I couldn't figure them out quite well. I mean, I felt like what's his name? Sylvester Stallone in that one movie, you know, where they have the turtles or whatever. Anyway, I asked for my own restroom, right? My way. And so they created it for me. And then it got to the point, which was kind of funny, is I wanted a shower. That the thing that you get cleaned is like a dust that comes over you and it just sort of goes away, right? And it cleanses the body. And I said, I would really like, can you have like a shower for me? And it was like, okay, sure. You know, and I showed them what showers is, and they made it. And what happened was, is that everybody kept coming to my room to use my shower because they all got addicted to the shower.
How many times a month do you visit with them? Do you know?
Sometimes it's on a daily basis, you know, sometimes for days. And other times it'll be a week or so. I come back to take care of my charity, you know, and rescuing the kids and stuff, or else, you know, I have other things to do because, you know, I'm human. And, you know, they encourage me to come and stay with them. And, you know, it's like, there's an attachment I still have to here. I feel like I plan to be here for a reason. So, you know, but Yeah, so it's like I said in the beginning, it's like having a really good neighbor that you like, you know, go hanging out with them.
Are the visits scheduled by them, or how's that work?
No, it's pretty much freelance. Kind of like, you know, if they have something interesting, I think that I'll like, you know, what I found was that being with them, and I couldn't figure out why they were so, you know, interested in coming with me, right? And who am I? I'm just a human and stuff. Well, I realized that when I watch them, it's just so fascinating watching the beauty in them and the way they react to things and how they describe things. And so what I realized later on was that's what they're doing with me. They are fascinated watching how I react to certain things. So it's kind of a mutual, you know, trade in that way.
Is there something that they've taught you that really stands out to you?
Love. I mean, they taught me sensing, right? Yeah, where you have like a gold ball, a heavy ball that moves through your skull and out your feet. And you repeat that again and again and again and again, right? Until it becomes a natural process and you don't let go of it. And then you add a memory of unconditional love that you have in your mind somewhere. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, and you see that and replay that memory again and again while this ball is going through you until that memory becomes real again, as if you're really there. That's what opens the door, right, to unlimited possibilities, probabilities.
Okay. Is there something that you taught them that stands out?
I think...
Other than the bathroom.
I think distraction, mostly, because they work all the time. They take like 20 minutes here or 20 minutes there where they just vegetate, right? And they just, you know, go empty. And if I bring a distraction to them, like, hey, we're having fireworks. I know how we can go down there and watch or a Halloween party or something like that, you know, where I can mask them and all. They'll drop everything. You know, it's not like they have a schedule or anything like that. Right. And so they're addicted to any kind of distraction. I mean, they've taken me places and I've taken them places.
Fantastic. So how can people reach you? Thank you so much for being on. I so appreciate it. How can people reach you?
They can go to my site, endingchildsexslavery.org, and I got all my contact information there. My books are all on Amazon. And if you read them, they're diaries, so you need to start at book one. And so they can go to Amazon. Plagiarin Diaries is what the title. Or you can use my name. I'm really easy to find, but I get emails all the time and stuff, and my email's on there and so on. And it's also on my books. So
if you had a message for people here on Earth that you would say for these aliens that you deal with, what would that message be?
Love.
Okay.
I mean, it's the answer to absolutely everything, and their lives are based on love. I mean, the sharing and everything like that, their whole history, once they started to evolve, it's all based on love. I mean, and that's the other thing, is one thing I've really discovered for myself is that it's not definable. Love goes so far, you know, and like me and Simjess are what we call a quantum entanglement, you know. Of course, I got all the looks and intelligence, but, you know, I'm hoping she's listening, but, you know, we're the same being in a sense. And so we can reflect on each other, what we see and how we feel about that. And she's really helped me open up, and that's included the whole family and other beings that I've met, other races and stuff. So, and that's the part of natural law. Everything is about love.
Jason, thank you very much. It's always great to have you on. Love listening to you talk about this. Love it.
Oh, I can go on for hours. And it's so much fun being here with you. It really is. I remembered you when you called me. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to get you back on again.
Yeah, sure.
All right, sir. Thank you so much. And I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. You have a great rest of the week.
You bet.
Okay. That was interesting. It's always fascinating to talk to him about stuff like that. Tomorrow we have a surprise guest. I'm not going to tell you who it is or what it is for that matter. But we're going to have a surprise guest tomorrow. So be sure to be here at 5:30 p.m. Pacific. I'm going to try and keep these shows as consistent as possible. Next week's going to be kind of shaky because I had to do something else Sunday night instead of book shows. So I'm going to start booking shows in the evenings after I get off my other gig over on TikTok. But this week we're going to have a straight week of shows, and I hope you guys enjoy them because there's all kinds of different topics. So you can find me now. I'm signing off here, but I'm going to be coming live on TikTok at around between 7 p.m. and 7:05 p.m. Pacific to do my tarot readings. It's always an adventure. I'm not like any tarot reader you've probably ever seen. I like to light the room up. I don't want to be one of those boring tarot readers, and I've so far been doing that, come on over, and I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll enjoy it. Anyway, thanks everybody for coming. I saw Pamela in chat room. I saw Chris Cahill in the chat room, and for everybody else that's out there, please know if you listen to the RSS feed, these videos are going to be uploaded the day after the show, okay? Because I have to wait for YouTube to finish processing them, and then I can grab the audio off and then upload. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I was really happy today because everybody that was here in the beginning, my intro played all the way through. I was shocked. So hopefully that keeps happening. I'll be adding on the outro that I have. I'm going to have to look at that and make some corrections to it because I've had team members come and go, so I'm going to have to make some changes to it. But I'll be getting the outro on. So it's good. The show will be looking better and better and better as we go. Again, it's Training Wheels. I didn't know where I was going to be brought, what I was going to be using to broadcast, whether it was EVMUX or Restream, and I decided to stay with Restream. So I'm excited. I'm really stoked to be back. I love doing the show, so we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of fun. All right, guys, I'm going to let you go. I will see you tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Always remember, check us out, California Haunts, Paranormal Investigation Team, all over the web. Check us out at California Haunts on TikTok. All right, we have a backup place on TikTok, California.Haunts2 with a big number. We're always trying to find followers and subscribers because you guys that have already TikTok, we're going to take you live on ghost hunts and all that good stuff. And I already did a ghost hunt at my house, so that was pretty fun. But yeah, so we're going to be doing all kinds of things. I'm going to be doing some cooking, especially at the holidays, doing some cooking. Like I mentioned earlier, building that gingerbread house and building that Oreo cookie train. And one of my friends got me a Lego Christmas tree and a Santa sleigh Lego. So we'll be doing Legos. So we're going to, the closer we get to Christmas, the more fun we're going to have. I'm going to try and go live from a couple events here in Sacramento. Don't know if I can yet, but we'll see what I can do. Okay, I'm going to try and go live from those. And so I got a bunch of stuff planned. And then as soon as I get this stuff settled with my iPhone and get rolling with that, probably in January, we're going to start taking you guys live with us on almost all our ghost hunts. So it's going to be interesting. All right, I will see you tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Please have a great rest of your evening. Come on over to TikTok between 7 p.m. and 7:05 p.m. Pacific. And we're gonna have a good time. All right. Talk to you later. Have a great one.
Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your